So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes. Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F35A. Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview. Wisconsin Eye is interviewing officials on the front lines in the fight against the COVID pandemic. No one is more involved in the front lines than the U.S. Senate. So Wisconsin Eye is so grateful that Senior U.S. Senator Ron Johnson has taken the time to talk to us from Washington. Senator, welcome back to Wisconsin Eye, sir.
Hi, sir.
Well, Steve, I hope you're staying healthy.
I am, sir. Thanks very much for asking, and I hope the same for you and your family. You chair the Senate Committee on National Security and Government Affairs. Let's talk about the coronavirus. How big a threat is it to our national security, Senator?
It's an enormous threat. I mean, not only do we see the horror and the tragedy of the actual disease and the illnesses and the deaths from that, but the economic devastation is dramatic. It's severe. And of course, you can't have national security without economic security. And that right now, in many respects, is hanging in the balance. So I'm highly concerned. I've obviously been talking about this since certainly mid-March. I've taken a fair amount of criticism about talking about putting everything in perspective. Again, not downplaying the horror that is the disease and the tragedies that are occurring, but also recognizing the human toll of the economic devastation, the unemployment, the potential, you know, the mental issues with that, suicides, domestic violence, that type of thing. This is horrible what's happening in this country right now, and quite honestly, globally.
Does it weaken us internationally, both from a military and a diplomatic standpoint, Senator?
Well, the concern is bad actors would be taking advantage of this, like China, like Russia, like Iran, like North Korea. So that's always a concern. The good news there is we really do have the finest U.S. the military in the world, and they are on high alert, and we are certainly looking out for this. For example, Chris Krebs, the head of CISA, the Cyber Security Infrastructure Security Administration, they're on high alert in terms of cyber attacks, and they're seeing an uptick in actually using COVID-19 for spear phishing and ransomware attacks and that type of thing. So we're aware of the fact that bad actors are trying to take advantage of the situation, but we're also on guard.
There was a report on CBS News last night that hackers, international hackers, are trying to get in the middle of the research to find a vaccine. Have you heard any? Do you know that to be true, Senator?
Well, I don't have any specific intelligence on that, but it doesn't surprise me at all, and I've seen the same news reports. Why wouldn't China? They have been stealing our intellectual property for decades, hundreds of billions, if not trillions of dollars worth of value. And so why would they stop? So I certainly find those reports very plausible.
Okay. On May 4th, Secretary of State Pompeo, said enormous evidence that the virus originated in a Wuhan laboratory. What's your position on that, sir? If it did originate there, was it released accidentally or deliberately, sir?
Well, again, I also find that pretty plausible. I would be shocked if it were deliberately released. You know, my guess would be probably accidental release, but it doesn't really relieve China of their culpability in not informing the world, of keeping things under wraps, not sharing the virus with all of us from a standpoint of its genetic makeup, so we could start developing tests and vaccines and cures and therapies a lot sooner. We're probably a couple months behind where we otherwise would have been had China been completely transparent. And so it's very unfortunate. I think, you know, China certainly has an awful lot to answer for. But again, it would be one of the most evil acts ever perpetrated on the human race if that was a deliberate act. I hope and pray it wasn't deliberate.
From what you're hearing, sir, on your briefings, do you anticipate second and third waves? And also, are you optimistic about a vaccine, or are you not convinced that we're going to see one in the next 6, 12, 18 months, Senator?
Well, starting with vaccines, I think the record production development of vaccine is something like 4 years. If we were to do it sooner than that, it'd be a modern medical miracle. And quite honestly, I don't think we have an effective vaccine on a coronavirus yet. And so I'm not hanging my hat on that. I mean, I'm hoping and praying. I'm hoping and praying for better therapies, better cures. It's one of the reasons that I have been very public about, you know, pushing and prodding and asking the doctors be allowed to be doctors, that we allow them to practice medicine, you know, explore different theories of the case, explore different therapies. I just spoke to a couple of doctors in New York on the front lines, asking them about, you know, what kind of formal forums are there for the exchange by frontline doctors with the information of what they're learning. You know, and fortunately or unfortunately, there's some informal ones on Facebook, but they're kind of relying on the CDC and the FDA. And listen, I know those folks are working 24/7. Everybody in government's trying to do this, but there are some bureaucratic problems there. And so I really do want to encourage private sector doctors, you know, not to be restrained. Obviously, they have to be restrained by their medical judgment, and you don't throw all protocols aside. But things aren't working right now. We do need to think outside the box. We need to give doctors and encourage them to use their full off-label prescribing rights. We've actually restricted that highly when it comes to hydroxychloroquine. Listen, I understand the studies. It doesn't work. Doesn't seem to be working. Possibly might even be negative. Very late stage in the hospital. That's why you need to make it available very early in the diagnosis, probably within 5 days of the onset of symptoms. But for political reasons, it was purposefully restricted, from what I can tell, from certain people in the NIH. I think it's quite honestly scandalous.
For political reasons, why?
Because President Trump trumpeted. You know, he said, "Hey, this may be a promising cure." I hope it is. You know, again, I'm not saying it is, but all I can say is the senator that really pushed the right to try legislation. You know, giving patients, when there's no other alternatives, the right to try a therapy that's either been fully approved, and that's what we're talking about in this case, or at least gone through the safety, give that right to the patient consulting with their local doctor. Right now, that's not the case with hydroxychloroquine, and I think it's ridiculous.
Dr. Fauci testified at Congress today. When Dr. Fauci seems to contradict President Trump, who do you believe, Senator?
Listen, I try and listen to all sides and come up with my own evaluation. I did not hear Dr. Fauci testify today. Now, I certainly understand President Trump's concern about the fact that our economy is closed. You know, Dr. Fauci is an epidemiologist. He's going to look at the world from a standpoint of epidemiology. And as a doctor, you know, what can we do to cure this disease and prevent further illness and further deaths? President Trump has a larger portfolio. He has to look at the entire spectrum. He has to look at all of the devastation, all the human toll by taken not only by the disease itself, but also by the economic harm, by all these shutdowns. So it's not an enviable position. It's not an easy judgment call.
Well, in this debate over whether states should determine reopening processes and timelines, or the federal government, who do you side with? Should it be a state-by-state decision, sir?
Well, listen, I'm all for federalism, and I think it actually was wise of President Trump to utilize federal resources and expertise to create guidelines, but then leave it up to governors to decide those for their states. First of all, you have to understand, this is not a binary choice. What I've been urging from day one is first of all, acknowledge that most of the economy is essential to somebody. So rather than issue, you know, safer at home or stay at home or shutdown orders, kind of with the assumption that everything has to shut down other than what we in government deems essential, I'd much rather flip that and take a look at, okay, let's assume we need most of our economy operating. What are the non-essential businesses that really pose a significant risk for out of control spread? And then, you know, have government shut those down, but then also target the aid, the financial support to their workers and those businesses, so hopefully they can reopen and rehire. I think we've done this backwards, and again, the result is enormous human toll because of the economic devastation.
Well, Congress has debated, correct me if I'm wrong, two or three packages. Now there is a discussion of another package. Should there be a third package? How big should it be? When should it pass? Should it include the immunity from liability for hospitals and other healthcare providers who are caring for COVID patients, Senator?
Yeah, first, we should not let trial lawyers, A, prevent an economic recovery and profit off of COVID-19. I think that'd be scandalous. So absolutely, we need to provide, from my standpoint, unconditional, absolute liability protection. So that'd be the first point. My next point, in terms of what we've already done, we've already authorized $2.9 trillion of financial support, really targeted toward workers, again, toward businesses so they can reopen and rehire so we can recover economically. Current figures, according to my staff, and I'm going to get these numbers from OMB, get them updated, but out of the $2.9 trillion, we probably spent less than a trillion, which means we almost have $2 trillion that has been unspent yet. So before we rush to pass another $1 trillion, and right now what Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer want to do is they want that money available pretty much unrestricted, for example, New York, maybe Illinois, maybe California, to bail out their irresponsibly run pension plans. You know, Wisconsin probably has the highest integrity, best funded, the most well-run public pension fund in the nation. I don't think Wisconsin citizens should, you know, be burdened with the added debt, and let's face it, it's added debt of bailing out those irresponsible states. So another way of looking at the $2.9 trillion, by the way, Steve, is many economists are saying about a third of our economy is shut down. That's about $600 billion a month. So $2.9 trillion is almost 5 months worth of total replacement cost of a third of our economy. So I think we've authorized more than enough. We had to do it really fast. We did it in a massive way to assure markets that we weren't going to, allow markets to collapse or freeze. So we've accomplished that goal. Now's the time to take a look at that $2.9 trillion, recognizing something done that massively, that fast, is going to be far from perfect. Well, let's start improving it. Let's go in and remedy the things that didn't work as well as we had hoped. PPP, very successful program in getting a lot of money out to a lot of businesses, millions of businesses fast. But a lot of businesses took it. And again, I'm not blaming them because the standard was so very low, but they kind of took it on as an insurance policy. And other smaller businesses that didn't have loans outstanding, weren't that important customer banks, they never had access to the money. And so I am so concerned about the Main Street businesses, the small entrepreneurs never took on debt. They instead have their entire life savings wrapped up in their business, and they've seen it wiped out. So I'm so concerned about helping those businesses potentially have the capital to restart and, you know, re-spark our economy.
So when California Governor Newsom says, as he did today, we Western states want $1 trillion from Washington to help us recover, at the moment you're a no, correct then?
Yeah, let me give you some facts, because I was just talking to Kevin Hassett, and we also saw an analysis from Moody's. Moody's is estimating the total revenue loss through fiscal year 2021, I mean, that's, you know, over the next 18, 19 months, the entire revenue loss to states, they're estimating about $243 billion, I think figure is, $343 billion. We've already authorized about $240 billion for the states. Okay. So what is Gavin Newsom talking about $1 trillion? You know, we need to be on guard and be very careful about everybody looking at the federal government that doesn't have the money. Okay. We're just going to have to print it. And by the way, we're going to print a lot. And I think it is important to learn from the Great Depression. We don't want to see our monetary supply shrink. We don't want to get into a deflationary cycle. But we can't afford to just open up the printing presses and just give money to states to bail out, for example, their pension plans. That's not COVID's fault. That's not Wisconsin citizens' fault. That's government in California or New York or Illinois.
Senator, having sat through many of your PowerPoints on the national debt, what are the implications from the national debt when you add $2.9 trillion or even more? When do those chickens come home to roost, Senator?
You really don't know. We were on a call in our conference with Hank Paulson, who was the Treasury Secretary under the Great Recession of 2008-2009. One of the things he cautioned, he said, the greatest mistake you could make is not spending enough money. Now, I caution everybody in terms of exactly what he's talking about there. But again, you don't want to see the money supply shrink where we actually get into a deflationary cycle. Nothing is more damaging than deflation. But you want to manage inflation as well. And of course, the big concern about the debt deficit at some point in time, creditors from around the world, people that have to buy our debt, are going to look at the United States and say, kind of a credit risk, we're not going to charge such a low interest rate. If we were to return to, you know, 50-year average interest rates, that would add another $1.4 trillion of just interest costs to our annual budget. That's more than we spend right now on all discretionary spending. So, but nobody knows. I mean, this is such an unusual economic calamity here. Right now, we have to do everything we can to keep markets operating efficiently and make sure that we have enough liquidity in businesses. Again, try and keep them successful. This is such unusual times. We've never gone through anything like this before, ever.
What should Americans expect? What's your advice in terms of how American lifestyles will change as a result of this COVID pandemic, Senator?
Well, again, I'm certainly hoping for an effective therapy or a cure, which is why I've been encouraging doctors to be doctors and let them practice medicine. If we had that effective cure, we could so drastically reduce the fear level. And by the way, it's justified concern about a nasty disease. But if people really felt, well, if I get this, I mean, let's say hydroxychloroquine works. I mean, if the minute I start getting a scratch throat or whatever, I can go on hydroxychloroquine, maybe with zinc, and it's not going to progress to hospitalization. Or even in the hospitals, I mean, talking to Dr. Corey, he's treating with steroids and anti-inflammatory drugs. If we had an effective therapy, yeah, we could break the back of this crisis almost overnight. But until that happens, you know, people have to be responsible. We have to respect this disease, but we also have to respect the fact that we need to keep our economy operating as much as possible. So let's make sure that businesses can open up, the ones that can, safely. Let's only, by government dictate, keep those non-essential businesses that pose a real risk to out-of-control spread, keep them closed, but give them the financial support they need, and otherwise encourage as much of our economy to open up as safely as possible. Let's start with hospitals. You know, we keep talking about, you know, we've canceled non-essential or elective procedures.
Yes.
Well, Steve, one person's elective procedures, another person's life-saving therapy or life-saving diagnostic test. Hospitals are laying people off. We haven't overwhelmed our hospital system. Remember, that was the goal of the shutdowns. Flatten the curve so we don't overwhelm our hospital systems. Now, I don't think anybody would want New York's hospital systems. That was close to overwhelmed, although nobody didn't get a ventilator. The doctors didn't think they had a ventilator. But throughout the rest of the country, our problem is hospitals are underwhelmed, and they need to start opening up because people need medical care.
Okay. You were a manufacturing executive before you went to the U.S. Senate. What's your advice to manufacturers? How should they differ in their practices with their employees and customers in the post-COVID era, Senator?
Well, again, maintain those, you know, follow those guidelines. You know, so much manufacturing, again, I've been through all kinds of manufacturing plants. Social distancing is quite easy. Not in all occasions, but in most. So that with personal hygiene, hand sanitation, that type of thing. Again, the more we learn about this, if it really can be aerosolized, wearing a mask, those types of things. Again, as we learn more, we'll know how to respond. But I think really most manufacturing can remain open. Problem we have with meatpacking plants, it's cold, it's wet environment. It's probably just the perfect environment for COVID to hang around quite some time. And again, sometimes those operations, people have to work pretty close together too. So they're going to have to learn how to modify to maintain those social distances. And again, just the personal hygiene, that type of thing.
Wisconsin Governor Evers uses the term turning the dial. And he yesterday announced, okay, 14,000 small businesses, if you have a door that leads to the outside, you can reopen 5 customers at a time. He said, the estimate is those 14,000 businesses employ 90,000 people. My question, Senator, is Wisconsin reopening too slowly?
Well, first of all, I'd just make it a whole lot simpler. I mean, let's have rational policy. I mean, grocery stores have to remain open. Look at all the other big box stores. I don't have any hard feelings about this. I'm glad that we have parts of our economy open because we have to. People need to eat. People need to have these products. But you've got the big box stores open, and yet the mainstream businesses that also are in retail, in many cases, probably a whole lot easier to maintain social distancing. They're closed down. So why don't we have kind of a uniform policy in terms of the types of businesses? To open up a store, let's say, I don't want to name one in particular, but you know, some of these stores are large. To have only five customers, it's really kind of absurd, quite honestly. So again, people aren't stupid. You know, people don't want to get this disease. You know, I go walking with my wife on the road. If somebody's on the same side as we are, one of us is going to go on the other side of the road. The same thing's true in grocery stores. The same, you know, where I've shopped, I wear a mask, and we all maintain our social distance. That can be done in just about every retailer. I think the problematic areas are places like bars, obviously other public events where people are sitting right next to each other. Those are the non-essential businesses that pose a real risk to out-of-control spread. Every other business that can be opened up safely, I think, should be allowed to be opened up. And they'll only open up successfully under two conditions. Their workers feel like they're going to be protected and stay as safe as possible, and their customers are. So I don't think you need a whole lot of government edicts on here. People are smart. You're not going to get employees coming in if you're not providing as safe as possible work environment under the current situations, and you're not going to get customers coming into the store either. So again, you know, put a little faith in people's common sense, particularly in Wisconsin, and try and get as much of our economy open as possible, because we have to recognize the enormous human toll of this economic devastation.
If you look at the Department of Health Services stats, most of the positives and the deaths, tragically, are aligned from maybe Madison to Green Bay. This is sponsored a debate in Wisconsin I'm sure you're aware of. WMC offers a regional opening debate, a regional reopening plan. Should Wisconsin reopen on a regional basis, sir? Because just yesterday, Governor Evers again rejected that.
Well, again, I think you have to be flexible. You know, obviously, we know where the hotspots are in Wisconsin and around the country. I mean, their states have virtually no deaths, you know, very few cases. Why should they be shutting down their businesses as well? It doesn't make sense. That's what I'm saying is, in terms of these government edicts, which are, I mean, you can't control every little aspect of people's lives. Trust in people to have decent common sense. I think we all are aware, and are not all, but you know, virtually everybody's aware of the seriousness of this disease. Nobody wants to catch it. You know, rely on people's best judgment, and certainly give cities and municipalities and counties where there's very little problem, give them greater leeway. I mean, I think you can certainly relax standards on those counties, and then be looking for hotspots. I mean, we have the public information now. We're mining the data. If we're seeing some kind of outbreak, man, you put a lot of resources into it. You know, concentrate on the people who are sick should be quarantined. The vulnerable should be protected as best as possible. And the rest of the society ought to be able to operate as safely as possible using their good common sense and following the basic guidelines.
The additional $600 per week in unemployment benefits may be running through the end of summer. Now, Wisconsin's maximum unemployment UI benefit is $370. So $600 in addition to that, that's $970. Here's my question. At the end of the additional $600 per week, if there's no major recovery, what type of debate and protest do you anticipate in America, sir?
Well, again, I was not in favor of the $600 flat fee. I had proposed an amendment the week before and supported an amendment that would have provided two-thirds of somebody's wages up to $1,000 a week. I mean, the fact of the matter is many employers who are open are having a hard time getting people to come back to work. Again, they're concerned about their health, legitimate, but also because they literally are making more on unemployment than they are making at their job. Because, you know, based on that in Wisconsin, that's about a $52,000 a year salary level. You know, again, nobody's getting rich off of that, but, you know, it's also prompting people to not reengage in the workforce. And, you know, quite honestly, you shouldn't qualify for unemployment if you have a valid job offer. But our unemployment officers are so overwhelmed, nobody's really checking that. So we need to be very careful about what kind of government policies, what types of government support payments we provide people that offer an incentive for people not to work, not to reengage in the economy. Back into an unsafe situation, but at the same time, I don't want to give people the economic incentive to just stay home and not reengage in the economy.
Well, if you work in the West Wing now of the White House, you must wear a mask. So here's my question. How often are U.S. senators tested?
I've never been tested.
You haven't been tested? Okay.
No. I did take an antibody test in Wisconsin. They just opened those up just to see whether or not I might have had it. I had some symptoms earlier, but and I will say, unfortunately, I didn't have the antibodies. I wish I would have been one of those, you know, fortunate majority that had COVID and just with very mild symptoms. So
okay. And what about the rules for your staff? Are they working at home? If they work in the Capitol, as you are right now, does everybody have to wear a mask, Senator?
This is pretty much a ghost town around here. So I probably at the most have three other people in our rather large office. Okay. All the rest of our staff are teleworking, which they can do, you know, really quite easily and quite effectively. I think we are all learning, you know, how to work in the digital world. I mean, we held a hearing last week, six different witnesses, all remote. We're going to hold a hearing again tomorrow on cyber threats, the cyber solarium, their recommendations. So we are very quickly learning and adapting to the current situation, fully utilizing technology. I mean, it's one of the things that we have learned here. I think we're probably leapfrogging the development of at-home work and telemedicine, teleeducation, all kinds of things, which maybe, you know, further on down the road might have huge benefits for our society, in particular telemedicine.
I want to respect your time, so just three questions on different subjects very quickly. Do you agree with the Justice Department decision that dropped the charges against former National Security Advisor in General, Mr. Flynn?
Absolutely. It is outrageous what is being revealed right now. It's actually outrageous that is not front page news on every daily newspaper, and it's not top of the newscasts of network news as well. What happened at the tail end of the Obama administration into the transition and the whole setup to a special counsel is outrageous. The corrupt behavior on high-level officials in the FBI is just unprecedented, and those people to date have not been held account. They need to be held accountable. No, I absolutely agree with that. I think Attorney General Barr is a person of real integrity, and I appreciate that he did that.
Okay, second of my final questions. Supreme Court today heard arguments on whether the president's tax advisors and banks should make public his tax returns. Should they be made public, Senator?
Again, I think that's every candidate's decision to either release their tax returns and to what extent they release them. I'll leave it up to the courts to decide this particular narrow legal issue, but I would caution everybody, Supreme Court set precedents. And you know, you may want these records, you know, these particular records from this president, but that would set up a precedent for other records from other future presidents as well. That's a co-equal branch of government. I would go carefully from that standpoint, because I think we do need to respect the co-equal branches of government. And things like executive privilege and deliberative process, all those types of things. Be careful about changing those kind of precedents.
The Marquette University poll released only hours ago, Senator, said Joe Biden 46%, President Trump 43%. The margin of error was 4%. What are your thoughts on Mr. Biden versus Mr. Trump on November 3 in the state of Wisconsin, sir?
Probably a toss-up. I don't put a great deal of credence in polls. I mean, if I would have done during my own race, I would have, you know, closed up shop and gone home with the tail between my legs. So the only poll that counts is really on election day. But I would expect Wisconsin to be very close in 2020 as it was in 2016.
Okay. And then look ahead 3 months from now, sir. What do you really hope? How America recovers from the COVID pandemic? Last question, I promise.
I am praying, and I mean, I am fervently praying for a cure or therapy that, again, can break the back of this crisis almost overnight so that we can try and recover economically, and we just don't see the level of deaths that we're seeing right now. To me, that is, it should be job one, and I do find it frustrating that there's been politicization of something like hydroxychloroquine. Again, I'm not sure whether it works. If there's a lot of anecdotal evidence of given early, it can be effective. I mean, let's explore different theories of this case. You know, we need a cure. We need an effective therapy. We may not have a vaccine, not ever, quite honestly. Wow. And having one for next flu season is one heck of a long shot. I don't want to be Debbie Downer here, but I would not think that we'll have a vaccine for the next flu season or possibly even the next.
Wow. Wisconsin U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. I want to thank you for taking time from Washington to talk to Wisconsin I on such important issues in such a historical time. Thank you, sir, and stay safe.
I appreciate the opportunity. You stay healthy.
Thank you, sir.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civics broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.